What's up, everybody? Welcome to Plant the Spear Podcast. Hope you are all doing well out there. I'm your host, Jesse, and thanks for tuning in. Haven't been on in a little while, kind of waiting for some news to build up. Decided to take a little bit of time off. I went to a Braves game, I think it was 2 weeks ago. I was excited to check that out. It was fun. I go to a lot of minor league games, but it's probably been 20 years since I've been to a major league game. And, Truist Park was really nice, and I love the Battery area around there. It was fun. Gotta say, though, their war chant was a little lacking. They need to work on that some. But it was pretty cool whenever, everybody in the stadium turns on their camera light on their phone or flashlight on their phone and does the war chant that way. That was pretty cool. It would be neat to see maybe them do that in Doak one time. And we went on a Friday night, and they do a little fireworks show after the game. And that might have been the most exciting part. I'm not going to lie. That was a pretty impressive. Their fireworks show is on point in Atlanta. So that was cool. It was fun. Glad to be back on the mic with you guys, though. We have a lot to talk about now. So we have a full episode going on. And it's an exciting one because, after so many years of just constant what felt like bad news, it seems like it's a constant flow of positivity now and good news. Around the program, it feels like a good time to be a Florida State fan. And after those couple years, it really makes you appreciate the good times because you never know how long they're going to last. And, there for a minute, I thought the portal was kind of working against us there. I mean, obviously, it's been, like I said, it's been a while since we've recorded. So, we haven't talked since the draft or since a lot of, the outflow of players. That was bound to happen at Florida State. We had talked about a couple of them, but then you saw Micah Pittman jump in the portal, which was a surprise. I think everybody was a little disappointed maybe to see that. It felt weird. It was like, why? Where are you going to go? I mean, you've already transferred once. I know they said they were cracking down on second-time transfer rules and things like that, but he ends up at Utah, and now you're kind of scratching your head, like, do we need to, maybe now look at receiver or something like that? But you really didn't know the status of his injury. You weren't really sure how long he was going to be out anyway. And, I mean, let's just, we talked about before just with his injury, not let alone him not being on the team anymore. But, we talked about if he were to miss September and not be there for LSU and Clemson, chances are you probably could have won almost every other game on the schedule with or without him. So, that was just gauging kind of the depth of the injury that you were going to feel with him being out. But, you did think you were going to get him back at some point, and now he does enter the portal. Guys, the football landscape changing. NIL and social media and popularity and building a brand, it's going to change the game, and I think that has a lot to do with what's going on with Micah there. But I wish him the best of luck at Utah. He did, great for us when he was here. Not the most productive guy, but he was a good leader for the team, good influence in the locker room, and, he did a lot of dirty work blocking and such. So, and then it looks like about half of the roster went to Colorado, which was, it's strange to me in a way. I get it. Because when you go back to the branding thing, you look at a place like Colorado, because of Deion being there now, they're getting all kinds of media attention. They're going to be in the spotlight. They're probably going to win, 2 to 4 games maybe. They're not going to be good. I mean, they'll probably be better, I think, than they were in the past, obviously, because you're just getting more talent and better coaching. But it's still not going to be good. And in a way, it feels weird to me, like, why, if you're a guy like, Derek McClendon and really any of them that went that have been at Florida State the past few years where you've been in a down period. Like, it can't be fun to be around a locker room in a 3-5 win team. That just can't be an enjoyable experience. But now you saw what 10 wins felt like last year. You knew what was on the cusp this year in Tallahassee. So it's kind of like, why wouldn't you want to see it through? Why wouldn't you want to be there for the cherry on top season of a lot of their careers? But, when you look at a guy like Amarion Cooper, who probably didn't want to play safety anyway, Colorado has about 10 players left after everybody hit the portal. So you're going to walk in and be an immediate starter at the position you actually want to play. You got like Derek McClendon. This is his last year. He needs snaps. He needs film. While I think he would have been a significant part of this defense, he's probably going to be your starter there. So I get it. You're getting that attention at a program that's going to get a lot of media attention. And so it does make sense, I guess. It just feels weird, like I said, to maybe want to continue to be on a team that sucks. You know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't you want to be around for something good? But I get it. There's only so much time. There's only so much opportunity to put film out there. But, You know, and then so it felt like the portal was kind of like, okay, well, now we're starting to feel the other side of it, because there were some talented players in there. Maybe not anyone who's going to change the outlook of your season or change the game for Florida State. You know, a lot of guys who maybe were highly touted but never really found their way kind of exited the program. But it was the first time that we had really seen you lose decent talent in the portal, you know, outside of maybe McLean or something like that. But then now it flips and it comes back to Florida State. And this staff continues to work their magic, landing Keon Coleman. And that's what we're going to talk about first, because it is the most exciting news. And then we have a couple other things to talk about. First bit of news, though, that I do want to touch on. Florida State, LSU, as expected, being it is on Sunday night, has been announced that it's going to kick off at 7:30 p.m. So another primetime game for Florida State. You know, again, like we said, it's on Sunday. It's probably the only game, unless there's some small game before that, on that day. So you expect it to be primetime anyway. But that's cool just to see them playing under the lights in Orlando. You know, like we said, another primetime game that they had a lot of last year. And it just helps elevate the brand. You're putting two big power teams, two potentially top 10 teams, were you know, expecting them both to be in the top 10 at the beginning of the season, facing off in prime time, the only game on TV that night. So it's going to be a chance for really both teams, but you know, we're Florida State focused, for Florida State to make their case on a national stage. I mean, if you go out and beat LSU on a Sunday night with all the eyes in the country watching, that's really going to kind of push this season's campaign into overdrive. And so that's exciting to see. But yeah, like we talked about, we're going to go ahead and get into Keon Coleman's commitment to Florida State, transfer wide receiver from Michigan State. And I mean, this has just got, you know, the timeline buzzing. This has got Florida State fan base definitely on high the last few days, because it is a huge commitment for Florida State. And we're going to definitely get into that. But, you know, again, man, this staff, they just continue to work magic in the portal, acquiring top talent. And I don't think there is any doubt in my mind that this is, you know, these other programs around the country, especially your rivals and fellow conference opponents, they just got to be watching this and be like, of course he picks Florida State. You know, another one. You get Jared Verse, you get Jermaine Johnson, you get Fentrell Cypress, you get Braden Fisk. Now you're getting Keon Coleman. Like, these guys got to just be sitting back and be like, what? I mean, come on. Like, can they really land everybody? And the answer is apparently yes. You know, I mean, of course, sure, you missed out on Jalen Key earlier. You know, he chose Alabama. You know, Florida State is on the up and coming. It's still a national power brand. It's still finding its footing from a down period. You know, so you're still going to have a little bit of trouble competing with the Alabamas and the Georgias of the world. But, you know, you've also done some things in the high school ranks to beat out Georgia for the five-star tight end. But it's just another talented grab from the portal by Mike Norvell and the staff. So let's talk about Coleman a little bit. Coming over from Michigan State, you know, Michigan State, it was one of those teams, they started hot under Mel Tucker. You know, they backed up the Brinks truck, gave him this big contract, and then they really kind of had a nosedive of a season last year. I believe they went 5-7, and they had a mass exodus, including their number one starting quarterback. So, you know, you saw a lot of questionable departures from that program, and I think a lot of that kind of led to what Coleman did. He was slated to be their number one wide receiver in 2023, kind of like our Johnny Wilson. So I do think it was kind of caught them out of nowhere. And, you know, when he hit the market, this was someone that Florida State went after, and they knew that this guy could be a game changer for them. And, you know, I mean, you look at his physical tools already coming in, 6'4", 200 pounds, you know, a physically developed receiver who is proven at the Power 5 level. So that's, you know, we'll back it up a little bit. When we talk about the receiver room at Florida State, and I put this in the commitment article that I wrote on our website for Keon Coleman, I said that when you look at Florida State's receiving room, I felt like it was kind of in a weird place for me. It was like, on the one hand, you felt good about who you got. You got Johnny Wilson. You know what he is. And when you think back to it, last year was really kind of his breakout season. So he can still continue to get better. He was still a young receiver last year. We saw Kentron Portier emerge in the spring. So, like, okay, there's our guy number two. Yeah, and then you had Vandravius Jacobs, who you feel really excited about, but he's still a true freshman. You know, you got Darion Williamson, who seems to be injured all the time, but if he's on the field, he's good. You got Ja'Kai Douglas, who can play the slot. Winston Wright's coming back. So you're like, okay, you know, we got some guys. And so maybe you don't need a receiver in the portal if scholarships are limited, but if you have one and you can find a game-changing receiver, then I think you go after him. Because to be perfectly honest, I don't think you needed to take just another depth piece like they did with safety, and we'll talk about that later. But I don't think you needed that type of player. But I definitely think if you could have went out and found a weapon like Keon Coleman to help Johnny Wilson, you know, because let's be honest, you're going to have to double team Johnny Wilson, and it's still probably not going to work. And we saw that multiple times last year. Like, if you don't get two guys to cover him, you're not going to stop him. So, you know, you knew the focus with one real proven guy, one looks to be coming along guy, and really no proven second threat, everybody's going to shade to Johnny Wilson. They're going to try and stop him first. And so you could see where they would greatly benefit from taking a guy like Coleman. And that's exactly what they did, which is why this is so exciting. So just some of his background: former four-star recruit from Louisiana. He has had two seasons at Michigan State so far. 2022 was kind of a breakout year for him. Didn't really play a whole lot in 2021. Stats for last season: he had 58 receptions on 88 targets for a 66% catch rate, 798 yards, 13.8 yards per catch, and 7 touchdowns. Excellent numbers, very productive, very good at catching the deep ball as well. So he had 3 100-plus yard games last year, all versus Power 5 defenses, which again, I love to have someone who has proven they can perform at the college level against Power 5 defenses. 155 yards and a touchdown in a rivalry game against Michigan. It was the only score for Michigan State in that game, and Michigan was a top 20 pass defense. So not only are you producing against Power 5 defenses, you're also putting on a monster game in a rivalry setting, somewhere that you need your players, your big name players, to step up. So that's exciting to see as well. PFF grade, very impressive at 76.1. He had 244 yards after catch. Only 3 drops is what PFF had listed. 62.5% overall contested catch rate. And when you filter out some of the shorter ones, when you look at balls of 10 plus yards, that number jumps up to 85%. So that is really exciting to see. You know, when you've got a guy who's 6'4", 200 pounds, has a basketball background, can kind of body you out of the way, has that good jumping ability, you know, this is going to be a guy that you're going to be able to throw it up to. And I know a lot of the highlights on Twitter that got posted around was, you know, them just kind of chunking it down the field and him being able to go up and get it. And that's exciting because now you have two guys that can do that. He did lead the team last year in yards and touchdowns at Michigan State. Like I said, he was slated to be their number one guy in 2023. So Michigan State's probably hurting right now to lose your number one quarterback and receiver to the portal. So like we said, this is a guy who came from Michigan State who was not a great team in 2022, and they were not a great offense. He didn't have great quarterback play, certainly not what we expect he's going to get here in Tallahassee from Jordan Travis. So that could also continue to elevate his game. Michigan State was 58th in passing offense last year. Florida State was 28th. So he should get a little bump there just by having a little better quarterback play as well. So to me, this is just an overall really exciting, very nice addition for Florida State. Obviously, he's going to be a day one impact player, you know, and he's another big body receiver, should I say. You know, when you go and you look at the roster, and I'm counting guys who are projected to contribute. Obviously, there's other guys on the roster that you probably will never see. But when you're looking at projected contributors, Florida State now has 9 pass catchers that are standing over 6'3". And that is impressive. I mean, you just have a lot of size at the position. And then you also have a lot of variance in size. You know, you still have a guy like Ja'Kai Douglas, who's a smaller burner type guy. Winston Wright, I believe he's around 5'10 or 6', coming in the slot. So again, you know, you have that range of size. You have that range, but you also have those really big receivers who are going to be hard to stop. You know, and a lot of the things we talked about when we saw Michael Pittman transfer was like, do they need a receiver? And again, like we said, you felt like they would want to take one because you didn't know if you were going to have Michael Pittman or not. But then, you know, when you look at what you feel like you lost, and I just want to put this little nugget out there, when you look like you feel like what you lost from Michael Pittman was his blocking ability. So I know PFF isn't perfect. I understand their grades are kind of take it with a little grain of salt. But when you look at the run blocking grade for each receiver, last year, Keon Coleman had a run blocking grade of 71.9 with 266 run blocking attempts, according to PFF. Micah Pittman in 2022 had a run blocking grade of 53.8 with 183 run blocking attempts. So it looks like, you know, obviously at 6'4", 200 pounds, he's going to be able to push DBs around smaller corners. And so you're getting the blocking ability too. Now, there's still some things they need to sort out in the slot. But to me, having this 1-2 punch of Johnny Wilson and Keon Coleman is going to be huge on the outside. It gives you a lot of opportunity. You know, it gives you another red zone target. I mean, we're already talking about Kyle Morlock at 6'6". You got Johnny Wilson at 6'7". Now you have Keon Coleman at 6'4". You just have so many big red zone targets this year, which is something that we know they struggled with a little bit in 2022, where you knew in the red zone they could throw it up to Johnny Wilson, but a lot of times you saw them do double coverage. So like we saw, I believe it was the NC State game where they threw that last fade to Michael Pittman, who, no offense to Michael Pittman, he's 5'10". Why are you throwing that to one of your shortest receivers on the team? So now if they were to try and double up Johnny Wilson, you can go to a guy who's 6'4", and you know he's got a 85% contested catch rate of balls 10 plus down the field. So, I mean, who are you going to double? You're going to have to essentially, you know, really this offense is going to be insane. I mean, you're going to have to pick your poison because they have so many weapons that are going to be really hard to stop. And Jordan Travis has to be just grinning from ear to ear, thinking about what 2023 is going to be and all the weapons he has at his disposal. Like I said, you get a legit second threat at wide receiver, which makes them really hard to cover because you can't single out just one guy. And I think the reason what's important, what I'm going to make a point on next is, you know, you have Johnny Wilson at Florida State, who was your clear standout number one guy. And you realize that when you have a dominant receiver on a team, a lot of times you tend to really feed them. And then you're like, okay, he put up almost 900 yards. But, you know, was he the main targeted guy? Of course, he's going to put up a lot of yards. But the thing about this is when you look at Keon Coleman, when he was at Michigan State, you know, we already mentioned he's not in a great offense with great quarterback play, but he wasn't their only silver bullet that like got fed the ball continuously. When you look at a guy who put up 800 yards, you know, they also had a second receiver with over 600 yards and he only had four less targets. So it wasn't like he just got fed the ball every single pass of every game, you know. And to me, when you look at the kind of distribution of wealth there at Michigan State, while I know they weren't necessarily a good team, you know, you also had that second receiver with over 500 yards, which was they had two total. Now, when you look at Florida State, they haven't had two receivers go over 500 yards in the same season since 2018 when Tamorion Terry and Nooney Murray did it. Now, does it matter? Maybe not, but in the grand scheme of things, for one of the other episodes that I'm working on for the podcast is what does it take to kind of win that national championship? Every playoff team in 2022 had at least two receivers go for over 500 yards. Now, Florida State was close in 2022. I believe they had one. Johnny Wilson was almost at 900 and Pokey Wilson was like 488. So it was pretty close. But obviously, like I said, it's better to have those multiple threats so you can't cover one guy. You can't just focus on the one guy. You have to keep your eyes peeled. And that's not even considering some of the other playmakers you have out here. You know, you already have Jaheim Bell, who a lot of people think is one of the best tight ends in the country, one of the most versatile tight ends. So now you add him to the mix. Like we mentioned, you still have, I'm still excited about Portier. Like, you can still bring him along and work him in. He's going to get a lot of playing time because you're going to have a lot of games where Coleman's probably doesn't need to play, you know, past the halftime mark anyway. But after what we saw in spring, I'm still excited to see what he can do. You know, I'm still excited to see Winston Wright get back. And so, you know, the targets are just piling up for them, which is really exciting for this offense. And, you know, you also, hey, we have to mention here, I mean, you got Destin Hill on the roster now. He finally became a Seminole, so that's exciting. You know, he's 2 years out, you know, from playing football, but he is a former four-star recruit, 6 foot, 195 pounds, looks to be in great shape. He was a top 100 recruit with elite speed in 2021. And so he looks to be in great physical condition, but we don't know, you know, how game ready he is. It could be another guy that you could get into the fold maybe later in the year. Who knows? Maybe he's ready now. I think if nothing else, can he return punts? You know, maybe that could be something where he or kicks. Maybe he could be someone you turn to in that department because they are kind of searching for one. And, you know, while he gets back into football shape, unless he's there now, that could be exciting. I mean, you get a guy with that speed back there, and that could be a game changer for Florida State if, you know, but you really just want someone to be able to catch the ball and get it to your offense. But it could be a wrinkle that Florida State could have by having Destin Hill there. But, you know, again, it just continuously adds to the depth of talent. So when you look at the powerful, I mean, this offense should be so fun to watch next year. It should just be like a fireworks factory. I mean, that's how it should be, to be honest. If they perform the way they did last year, given the elevation of talent that they've had, the infusion of talent that they've upgraded even farther, then, I mean, how can you not really be excited to watch this offense next year? So Florida State already had a top 10 offense in 2022, and it wasn't like they just feasted on a lot of bad defenses. They faced six top 50 defenses last season, so they did it against good competition. And now you've added some additional weapons here to work with. And when you just kind of go through and look, when you look at the PFF grades, and again, we know they're not the gospel, but they're worth, you know, at least looking at. They're pretty good at identifying like who's an impact player and who's not. So we'll just roll with it that way. But when you look at PFF grades with a minimum of 20 attempts in each category to kind of filter out kind of the weird, like if you had maybe one catch for a touchdown, your grade might be through the roof or something. But you start with Jordan Travis, sixth highest overall PFF pass grade in 2022, highest overall graded Power 5 quarterback coming back at the helm. You get Trey Benson back, 13th highest run grade. And keep in mind, he was also splitting snaps last year, and so he had a lot smaller workload than a lot of the other backs on the list. You have Johnny Wilson and now Keon Coleman on the outside, both top 20 in receptions over 20 yards. So you have two of the top 20 best pass catchers of plays over 20 yards. And then, like we said, you know, when you look at Florida State last season, Florida State was third in plays over 20 yards. The only two teams ahead of them was Western Kentucky and Georgia, and both of them played at least one additional game, whereas Georgia had two additional games. So Florida State would have probably, you know, they'd had an extra game, probably would have been tied for or leading the country in plays over 20 yards. Now you have two of the top receivers as far as 20-yard plays go. I mean, it's just like, you know, this offense should be a case of dynamite strapped to a gas truck. You know what I mean? Like, it could go at any moment, and it should just, it's going to be exciting. Now, of course, they have to stay healthy, and they have to live up to the hype. Of course, they're still that. But, you know, when you look at it on paper, I mean, this offense should be just bananas. I know that sounds kind of funny, but I mean, I'm excited. I don't know about you guys, but I'm excited. I don't think we've seen an offense this good in Tallahassee since, you know, like 2013. And it makes you really start. I mean, I hate to wish our lives away and blow right through summer, but man, I'm ready for fall. I'm ready to be in Doak Campbell watching this. So continuing down the list, like we mentioned, you got Jaheim Bell, who's was the 11th highest graded tight end last year. And then you add Kyle Morlock, who we know has to transition from D2, but he's still 6'6" and had productive numbers there. Don't forget about Biscuit, who's another big tight end for you. Offensive line also added experience and depth, so you think that you're going to have a better team blocking for you up front, a better group, should I say. And, you know, when you look at this offense, there's so many weapons they can attack you with. It's like, well, how do you beat them? And that would probably be to try and not let Jordan Travis utilize his weapons. Well, first off, good luck, because he already has elite running ability, which we already knew about. And you have an offensive line that was greatly improved last year, kind of reloaded with more talent this year. And, you know, so it's an exciting combination. It all snowballs into what should be one of the best, if not the best, offenses in the country next year. But like I said, you still got to come out on the field and do it. I mean, I don't want to just sound like I'm just, I don't know, like I just got on complete fan goggles over here, because, you know, they did have some stretches where they didn't perform well. You know, you couldn't score even 3 points in the second half of the NC State game. You know, you got on a dry spell there against Wake Forest. So you still have to go out and do it. It doesn't matter what you have on paper if you can't go out and do it on the field. But man, let me tell you what, I mean, if you're at least just envisioning what could be, I mean, it's exciting. So just looking at some more fun numbers here. So when you look at Johnny Wilson, and when I go back, and it's more the experience, you know, because Florida State's been a young team in the past, and now we know 2023, they're one of the more veteran teams, returning the most production in all of college football. And when we talk about that production on offense, And when we're talking about production from 2021 and returning and Florida State returning the most production, all that, of course, looking at last year using the numbers from their respective schools, I mean, you're bringing in just some of your top playmakers. So you have, or bringing back, should I say, Johnny Wilson, you're bringing back 897 yards, 5 touchdowns. Keon Coleman, 798 yards, 7 touchdowns. Portier, 283 for 4 touchdowns. Winston Wright, of course, you have to go back to 2021 at West Virginia, 688 yards, 5 touchdowns. Jaheim Bell had a down year at South Carolina last year, still had 492 all-purpose yards, 528 in 2021. You know, Trey Benson had 142 receiving yards, almost a 1,000-yard rusher. Tua Philly was at 454 yards rushing, 268 receiving. Jordan Travis had over 533 yards of rushing yards. That's sack-adjusted. You know, 3,741 all-purpose yards for Jordan. So when you combine those all-purpose yards through the just the guys I named, just 8 of your top playmakers, that's 5,110 combined all-purpose yards with 47 touchdowns. The number one offense in 2022 in the entire country had 6,832 total yards and 79 touchdowns. So you're creeping up on that with just 8 players. You know, you're still not talking about Rodney Hill, CJ Campbell. You're not talking about getting Ja'Kai Douglas involved. You're not talking about what you might get out of Kyle Morlock or Markieston Douglas. You know, you're not talking about a lot of those guys. And so, you know, you just look at, again, the offense, like we mentioned, these guys are also progressing. You're looking at a guy like Trey Benson. Last year was his first real season as a Power 5 running back because he was dealing with injury. You know, so now you're going to have those guys with more experience and more talent around them, so you can't necessarily devote a lot of resources to stopping one or the other. So, I mean, this offense is just, it's going to be nuts. You know, I mean, like I said, when you think about it, you have a great 1-2 punch now at wide receiver, a quarterback who can take full advantage of that and can hurt you with his legs if you try and stop, you know, if you just put 10 DBs on the field. You also have a top 5 tight end room. You have a very deep top 5 running back room, in my opinion. Just, you know, pick your poison how you're going to stop this offense. So, you know, it's really exciting. And I think it could be, you know, I think the defense is going to be better. I think it's going to be better this year. Of course, there's some areas where you're a little more concerned about the defense than you are the offense. But it's not like you haven't brought in a lot of exciting talent on that side of the football, too. So, you know, even if you had to get into a Big 12 team thing where you have a really great offense and the defense is kind of lagging a little bit, which I don't necessarily know is going to be the case for Florida State. But, and that's something that I'm working on in another episode that I have coming up, is kind of like what it takes to win a championship as far as your total offense and total defense, like, you know, where you need to be on the spectrum. And I do think that, you know, Florida State is going to have an elite offense next year. They definitely should. But when you look at the defense, it just really almost kind of needs to be good enough. That's really all you need. And, you know, like when you look at 2022, the playoffs last year, you had TCU was the 27th ranked offense, 95th ranked defense. So, you know, their defense sucked and they still made the national championship. Now, of course, when you look at the other three teams in the playoffs, their defense was 6th, 14th, and 10th. So you do need to have a good defense. But, you know, Florida State might just have enough of an offense that they can kind of make up for some of the holes you got. But again, I'm still excited about this defense. I still think they're going to be good. You know, like we talked about with the PFF, I mean, you look at some of the guys that you have on defense. You have on your interior, you have Braden Fisk, who was the 15th highest graded defensive tackle last year. Fabian Lovett, despite missing half the season with injury, he was the 81st overall ranked defensive tackle. Darryl Jackson, he wasn't that highly rated, but I mean, he's 6'6", over 300 pounds, had some dominant stretches in the spring. You know, you got Joshua Farmer coming back. You talked him off the ledge. He's back in now, back in the boat. So you just know that you have a lot of talent up front. Obviously, Jared Verse, Patrick Payton, ACC Defensive Rookie of the Year coming back. You know, I just think that, you're going to be fine up front on the defensive line. You're going to have one of the most dominant defensive lines in the country across the board. So it's going to be able to help you make up for some areas of weakness on defense. And I still like Tatum Bethune at linebacker. I still like Kalen DeLoach. I still like DJ Lundy. I think you have a good group of starting linebackers. It just gets a little thin behind them. You know, but Tatum Bethune at UCF was a 100-plus tackler. He played through some injury last year in a defense that was new to him. You know, he's a year older now. another year in the system. So, you know, don't sleep on what they could be still. I mean, they're still progressing. Kalen DeLoach is an exceptional athlete and has shown flashes at times. You bring in Fentrell Cypress, the 11th highest graded cornerback from last season. You have Greedy Vance still. You have Renardo Green. You have Jerrion Jones. You have Azaria Thomas that you feel good about. You know, you're just a little bit worried about what you have at safety. But, you know, and we're going to talk about the player that they took here in just a second. But I still like Shaheem Brown. I don't, you know, I think he'll be formidable there. You know, he has, I went and looked it up, he has 480 snaps of experience now with a PFF grade of 72.7. So it's not like you're starting a true freshman back there. Akeem Dent has 1,884 snaps and a pretty decent PFF grade at 68.7 in 2021 and 66.3 in 2022. And, you know, if you had to, you could probably move one of your corners to safety in a pinch. I mean, you only have like 10 of them that you feel really good about. I mean, you have a lot of corners that you feel pretty good about. So while I get it, depth is a concern, I'm not overly concerned about your starting two. I do like that you have a lot of talent at quarterback that you feel fine about there. So, you know, they did take another player, and we'll go ahead and mention him now. They, of course, we already talked about they missed out on Jalen Key, who committed to Alabama. And personally, I think that they will probably go after, you know, if there's a good option, of course, in the portal, if there's like a grad transfer or something like that, with more experience, I think you could still see them go after that type of safety. It would be nice. It would be nice insurance policy. You know, but again, guys, it's hard to stockpile talent in the era of the transfer portal and NIL. A lot of people don't want to come in and sit when they don't have to. You know, they don't want to come in and be a rotational player. When, you know, you look at, you know, Florida State situation. You have guys who left Florida State to go to places like Colorado because they're going to start. You know, and they might even get an NIL deal on the side. So I do, you know, it is going to get a little bit harder to stockpile talent in the future, you know, when other teams can be, if they can offer you an NIL deal, if they can offer you immediate playing time. But I definitely feel, I like Shaheem Brown. I'm a fan of his. I think he's going to be fine. I think Akeem Dent is what you need. You know, he's good enough to fill the role that he's going to play. Of course, hypothetically, if you could have brought back Jamie Robinson, you would have felt just amazing about this team in 2023, not, you know, more than you already do. But I really feel like when you look at Keon Coleman, and, you know, I think when you missed out on Jalen Key, you were like, oh, well, you know, we're going to still need somebody here. And then you took the JUCO player that they took, you were kind of like, well, that doesn't really solve the issue. But then you get Keon Coleman, and at the same time, it's like, I think Keon Coleman is going to make more plays for your offense than Jalen Key would have stopped for your defense. And so I think it's a, you know, if you had to pick one or the other, I would take Keon Coleman 10 out of 10 times. But just looking at the JUCO safety that they took, Ashlyn Barker from Iowa Western Community College, who was the 2022 JUCO National Champions. So at least he was at a good school on a good team. Now, he did redshirt in 2022, so it's not like he has a whole lot of experience. He is an unranked prospect coming out of high school in large part due to his junior season getting canceled due to COVID, also missing time for injury as well. He did get some offers from Group of Five schools, as well as Oregon State being his other Power Five offer. And that is despite redshirting at Iowa Western. So, you know, they must have seen something in it. They must see that upside potential. He does have really good size, 6'3", 200 pounds. So he's a big safety. Now, I don't know, maybe down the road you could move him to linebacker if you felt like you had to. But you do get multiple years with him, 4 years to play four seasons after the redshirt. I do believe I read where Adam Fuller evaluated him in person, which I do think helps. And as far as multiple seasons, Keon Coleman also does have multiple years of eligibility left. But when you watched his commitment announcement, he did say for the next 8 to 9 months. So I'm assuming he's getting ready to have like a one and done type of year at FSU and try and take it on to the NFL, which is fine by me. Of course, you'd love to have him in 2024. But if he has an NFL type season, you know, or like a draft worthy season at Florida State in 2023, then you probably did something on the field that's worth just enjoying the 1 year you had him and wishing him the best in the NFL, which, again, you know, it would be nice to see Florida State put another receiver in the draft, in the league, which obviously, you know, Johnny Wilson's going to as well at some point when he decides to go. So that all helps too. I mean, it helps in recruiting and everything to be able to show that you're putting talent in the NFL. But, you know, when you look again back at Barker here, he does give FSU additional depth at a position that really needed it. And he's a multiple player with good size and athleticism just not a whole lot of experience. And so, I think they do need to look for, you know, possibly look for additional help. But at least you did build a little bit of depth here. You know, you also have the two freshmen behind them. So I think you'll be fine. I don't know exactly how many roster spots they have left that they can even take. I'll have to go through and do a count on them. But, you know, when you look at who I think that they should possibly, like if there's any portal needs remaining, I would say that, of course, experience safety is probably number one. And then linebacker depth would be a depth piece would be okay. Even a day one starter, I think, would be excellent. If you could find someone in there who could come in and start for you day one, I don't think you worry about hurting anybody's feelings because I think you have room for it. And then, you know, maybe another defensive end that would be a quality depth piece. But, you know, like we said, anytime with Coleman here, anytime you can stockpile talent with the goals that Florida State has in 2023 to win the conference, to go toe-to-toe against LSU and Clemson, to possibly make a playoff run, you want to stockpile as much talent as you can. And that's what they did with Keon Coleman. They went out and got a top-level talent. You don't need to just stack depth pieces in there. So to me, that's some places you do need depth. Some places I feel like you're fine on this roster. But some places, if there's a game changer available and you feel good about getting them, you just have to go after them. I mean, sometimes you have to risk rocking the boat to be able to get that talent. And, you know, competition breeds excellence. So I think this is only going to help further things along. And to be fair, unless you're a grad transfer, the portal's already closed. So you're ours now. I mean, you hate to be like that, but it's the truth. So at least you got everybody kind of locked in the boat now, unless you're a grad transfer. So again, guys, it's a lot of reason to be excited about this offense in 2023 and what Florida State can do. And, you know, just doing a quick count, I went back and I was looking at some things. I remember seeing an interesting stat last year. And when you look at, and again, like we talk about with PFF grades, Pro Football Focus, they're not the gospel, but they are good at identifying who's kind of impact players and who's not. And when you look at their grades, 60 is usually what you get for walking on the field and breathing. 70 plus is your quality starter status at the Power 5 level. Now, the reason I even bring this up, and because at first last year I was like, okay, well, that's a neat stat, but I don't know how relevant it is. So the teams with the most 70 plus graded PFF returning players last year, number one in the country was Georgia with 20 coming into 2022. Now, obviously, as obscure as that stat may seem, it did end up translating into success on the field with them winning the national championship. Now, when you look at Florida State so far right now, including the transfers, they are returning a total of 26 players that graded above 70 on PFF. So, like I said, take with that, do with that what you will, but that is an exciting stat to see when you see how it did translate last year for Georgia and looking at Florida State having 26 compared to 20 that Georgia had last year. So it's just all about that returning the returning production, the returning level of talent. And that's something that Mike Norvell and the staff have done since they've got here. They have continuously churned the roster out and got, you know, the level of talent a lot higher. You have some dudes on this roster now, and you didn't have those before. So, you know, you should be able to compete on a high level this year. So, again, I'm really excited about what we're going to see from this offense. And I still think the defense, you know, they're going to be fine. I think overall, you know, kicker still might be your biggest concern, but it's going to be exciting in 2023. It should be a fireworks show for this offense, and it's going to be fun to watch. So one of the last things I want to talk about before we get out of here is currently, you know, the ACC annual meetings are going on right now in Florida. And, you know, we've heard a lot of things come out of there talking about the seven teams or eight teams now, I think they have, that could be banding together to disband the conference as a whole, which hypothetically I think people are thinking will get them out of the grant of rights. It may be a possibility. I'm not sure. I think a lot of it's just going to be talk for right now because, you know that a place like Florida State and a place like Clemson are going to find somewhere to land. But for some of the teams, when you start getting deeper down the ACC list, it would be a calculated risk for some of those teams without an assured landing spot. You know, you could see somewhere like the Big 12 would probably expand if they had the chance at taking some quality brands because of the hit they just took losing Texas and Oklahoma. You know, if you could get, say, Louisville feels like they would be a good fit for the Big 12, They already have West Virginia, so maybe if they could grab a team like Pitt. I know Pitt kind of feels more like a Big Ten team, but you know, then you get the Pitt-West Virginia rivalry back in your conference. You would also have Louisville, West Virginia, and Pitt kind of on that side of the country to expand your reach. You know, you could see something like that. But one thing is, when Alford kind of blew the, you know, kind of blew everybody's spot up by talking about how bad their TV numbers were, some of these teams are going to be a hard sell. I mean, who wants to take Boston College? You know, who wants to take even, I mean, I know Virginia Tech is a, you know, they're a well-known brand, but they haven't done anything in a long time. They don't have any success to hang their hat on. Their viewership is not all that great. You know, and when you look at the top teams as far as viewership goes, even success, it was Florida State and Clemson head and shoulders above everybody else, and the top ranks are dominated by the SEC and the Big Ten teams. So you just kind of got to wonder what some of these seven or eight teams that are joining in on this, like, what are you, where are you going to go? You know, who is going to want to take a Wake Forest who has a very small TV market, has a very small draw as far as fan attendance? To me, those teams are probably plenty happy staying in the ACC. So I would say that a lot of this, I wouldn't hold my breath like next week we're going to announce that we're out of the ACC, although it would be nice. I think this is going to be years down the road, but either way, I think that the message is clear that the current model in the ACC is not sustainable. The revenue gap is not sustainable for the teams that are trying to compete on a national level, especially when you get to a 12-team playoff next year and you're going to be competing more often in the playoffs against teams from the SEC and the Big Ten that have that revenue gap. I just think this is kind of one of them things where it may not happen in the next year or two, but I just don't see things going all the way to 2036, to the end of that grant of rights. I just don't see that happening to me. Now, they are talking about some possible unequal revenue splits, which, again, presents a whole kind of new set of problems. I mean, they're looking at, you know, maybe more of a performance-based model, which is great for teams like, say, Wake Forest, who does a lot with a little, and it really is impressive what they're able to do, you know, speaking of teams like that. But then when you also talk about, you know, you're bringing in more of viewers, which is what pays the bills, which is what gets you the TV contract, that a team like Florida State should get a lot more, and they don't. But when you start, you know, it's only one pot of money, and when you have to start taking from one program to give to another, you're going to have some bad blood there. And, I mean, you could say, well, who cares? But the whole problem is you need the ACC as a whole to elevate themselves. You know, you need these programs to start focusing more on football. So when, you know, maybe you do add a team or two, maybe you do try and go back to ESPN and renegotiate some contracts, you need instead to be like, we have two good brands and the rest are kind of, you know, and now you're taking money from them too. You know, you can't rob Peter to pay Paul, as they say. So I think it's one of them where a rising tide lifts all ships, and you're going to have to figure something out. This is not sustainable. You're going to have to figure something out. And I just don't know that an unequal revenue split, like, it may help, but I don't, in the short term, I just don't think it's going to be your long-term solution. Yeah, obviously, we all feel like the ACC is kind of a dying ship at this point, or a sinking ship, should I say. But you know, we'll see how things play out. Like I said, I wouldn't look at anything going on, you know, happen. We know 2023, who they're going to play, and we'll just have to wait and see in the future. But I do think it does bring up a kind of a fun topic where a lot of people like to ask, you know, could Florida State compete outside the ACC? Because a lot of people feel like, oh, well, that's the easiest path to the playoffs and things like that. And I would say that, first off, okay, you could argue that, certainly. I get that argument. But you also have to look at when you have, if you played in the SEC, then like we talked about with LSU versus Clemson, this was the past episode that we did, which would be a bigger win for Florida State. I said that I felt like if beating LSU is going to get you more cachet with the voters and the pollsters and things like that, the national media, then a win over Clemson would be, because people see them as the SEC, reigning SEC West champion, on the come up. Clemson may be falling off, or really not sure. So to me, you know, if you're, especially when you look at going forward, because you know it's not going to happen this year at a 12-team playoff, you know, you could probably be in the SEC and go 10-2 and still make the playoffs easily. Whereas the ACC, you know, the water may start to get a little murky there because of the strength of the overall conference. So, you know, there is that too. You could have some room for error if you're playing Alabama, LSU, Georgia, things like that. But, you know, and versus Syracuse, Wake Forest, and, you know, say Duke or something like that. I get that argument too. But in the same breath, I do think that Florida State would be fine to be able to compete outside of the ACC. You know, when you just looking back at some of the years, and of course this accounts for when Florida State is its normal self, when they are good, because obviously the last few years, you know, I don't know that we could have competed in the AAC. So just looking at some of the last few years when Florida State had a 10-win season, which is, you know, I guess you could say a measuring stick of being at least successful. So 2010, you beat the SEC East champion South Carolina in a bowl game. 2013, you beat the SEC champion Auburn in the national championship game. 2015, you beat the SEC East champ Florida. 2016, you went 2-0 versus the SEC. You beat Florida and Ole Miss. Beat a 10-win Michigan in a New Year's Six game from the Big Ten. And 2022, you beat the reigning SEC West champion in LSU, kind of in their home turf. So I don't really think they're, you know, yeah, you may not go undefeated as often. You know, we've had a couple of undefeated seasons now. Maybe that doesn't happen as often. But I do think that you would have no problem competing in a conference like the SEC or the Big Ten, especially the Big Ten. And when you look at, like, for instance, in the SEC, when you look at Missouri, they came in and won the SEC East in 2013 and 2014. This was a team that had not won a conference title since 1969 in the Big Eight. Now, they did win three division titles in 2007, 8, and 2010 in the Big 12. So, but, you know, they came in and they competed. And I think Florida State is by far, obviously, a better program than Missouri. You know, you look at the Big 10 last year. Purdue made the 2022 Big 10 title game after losing to Syracuse, a team that FSU absolutely dominated at home, and then got beat 63-7 by LSU. Now, granted, they were missing their starting quarterback, but you get the point. Like, if a team like Purdue can make the conference championship, if a team like Missouri can win the SEC East multiple years in a short amount of time of being in the conference, I don't see where you would be worried about Florida State competing in those different conferences. Now, I would also be excited, like, if I had to choose which one it would be, naturally, I'm going to take the SEC because the regionality of it, the matchups that you get, the history that you get with some of the schools, you know, to me, taking a Saturday night trip to Baton Rouge to take on LSU would be amazing. You know, going to Auburn, going to Ole Miss, going to the Grove, going to Neyland Stadium. I think that would be a really awesome atmospheres for Florida State, who feels like they're an SEC brand. You know, they have sellout crowds. They have big TV numbers. This fan base travels, which is something outside of Clemson the ACC just doesn't do. You know, NC State gets some good home crowds, but no one travels other than Florida State and Clemson in this conference. Miami shows up once a year for that game. But other than that, that's really it. And I think it would be a lot more fun environment to be in the SEC. And, you know, it's cold up north, so I really don't want to have to drive up there for like a December game. I would hate to have to do that, but it would still be cool to go to the Big House, and it would still be cool to go to a game at Ohio State or something like that. But I think year in and year out, I think the SEC is where it's at. So, you know, again, I don't think the ACC is going to dissolve anytime in the next year or two. But like I said, I just do think that overall this looks like the ACC's current model is going to be unsustainable, and something will probably happen sooner than 2036. I think that's the whole takeaway from it. But yeah, and we'll just have to wait and see until then. But for now, we know who Florida State's playing. We know LSU is in just over 100 days to kick off. And so that is exciting. I'm ready for this game. I think Florida State's going to get a chance to, you know, really stick their name out there the very first week of the season. And I do think the Keon Coleman commitment is just it changes your outlook on the season in a way. You know, I don't know how many games I would give Florida State extra because of him being on this team, but I will tell you this, there's a lot of games coming in where I now feel a lot better about what you have going into that game and the possibility of winning. You know, I feel a lot better about going on the road against Clemson this year, which was a team that struggled to stop the pass last year. Their secondary was kind of rough, and so now you have another weapon to attack them with. You know, I feel better about going against LSU, who has a lot of talented DBs, especially the ones that got in the portal. But, you know, that's going to be their first game in the new defense. So, it just makes you feel a lot more confident going into the season to have Coleman on the roster. And I guess last thing before we get out of here, guys, is obviously softball continuing doing what they do, their run of success. Won the ACC championship. I know that was like a week ago. We haven't had a chance to talk about it since. They are hosting a regional at home starting this weekend, depending on when you're listening to this. So I want to wish them luck, and hopefully they have a deep run into the tournament, because it's just, they're always fun to watch. You know, they are, you can just always count on them being good. And it is nice to see them continue their run of success. So best wishes to them this weekend in the tournament, and hopefully they come out victorious. So with that being said, guys, we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. You know, just more positive news and lots of reason to be excited about this season. I cannot wait, like I said, to be back in Doak Campbell Stadium and watching this team. It really feels like it's going to shape up to be a very special 2023 season for FSU, and I can't wait for it. Still working on the preseason magazine. I have pretty much most of the layout done. We are over 30 pages so far, so I got a lot of work left to do. So I'll be busy on that. Got a lot of content to put out, but I think you guys will enjoy it. So we're still a ways away from that, but just know that I am working on it. So with that being said, as always, guys, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for your support. Everybody have a great weekend, and go Noles.